This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, talking to you live to tape from downtown Glen Burnie, Maryland, in the state of Maryland, and the state of wetness and coldness and all kinds of other good stuff that the weather has treated us to, thank goodness, including Caps hockey. So going to do things a little bit differently this week. Anna, unfortunately, is still off on holiday break, has some family obligations as well. But we're going to do things triple threat style this week. We have one, not only one, but two special guest co-hosts this week. Going to introduce the first one. Just heard him recently. He says he's just a fan, but he's no ordinary fan. He's got a YouTube special, covers the games. And, of course, I'm talking about Mr. Bradley Silvestro.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, Brad. Good to have you. And our second guest co-host, also heard him before, a couple times before. He is the stat guy on Twitter. He is stats guy Blake Allen. Blake, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Thanks for coming on, guys. Okay, so it was another up and down week this week in the world of Caps hockey. And yeah, we're at the halfway mark, of course, and some are wanting to be pushing the old panic button because, well, there's some slippage in the standings, and of course, the Caps haven't been winning at the same clip that they have been, and nor have they been playing well, but there's also been inconsistencies in the lineup, too, as we'll go over in these recaps, the three recaps. So we'll try and kind of figure out what, if anything, if there is, as far as a reason to panic. Personally, I don't think there is. That's not to say they haven't been playing as well as they have been, but I think between the three of us, hopefully we'll make a case to, you know, at least find a way to keep on believing in this, in this team. All right, so in the interest of time, yet let's just get to it. So the first game of the week that occurred was the game against the Winnipeg Jets this past Tuesday, I believe it was. Yes, and that was a 4-3 overtime win.
Hold on, what did you just say? Did you just say the Caps won in overtime?
Yes, I did.
Oh my goodness. The sky is falling. What is happening? The Caps have won in overtime.
The Caps, you heard me right.
So fortunate to watch this game live. And this was a testament. This game was an absolute testament about the tenacity that the team can have, about going down and sticking to a system and sticking to what they know and crawling back into a game and then winning in overtime.
I couldn't agree more. And well, as the scoring summary will bear out, it didn't look very good in the beginning. And yeah, this seemed to be another, here's the goalie letting in a soft goal. Here's the team falling behind. And I don't know. I want to ask the both of you, does it seem like the games don't go, if the game doesn't go a certain way at that being the Caps scoring the first goal, it changes the makeup of the game, how they play, how they approach it?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no question. They play a better, more methodical game when they are behind. And I don't think I don't think any numbers, Blake, you're the stat guy. You can feel free to correct me on this. I don't think any number will say otherwise that the Caps, when they take the first goal, that they play better than when they play down. I think they absolutely play better when they're playing from behind. And we've now, I think we saw that, really it happened at a certain point in every game this week, but definitely in two of the three games, the two that they won.
Hang on, I'm pulling up these numbers.
Go for it.
Yeah, they have their bottom 10 in win percentage when scoring first, and they are top 10 in win percentage when trailing first. So, yeah,
there you have it.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah, that I don't think we really need much more evidence than that. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of figured that. It was kind of obvious, but I did want to put that out there. So I'm trying to look, I am trying to combat this sudden talent for these. Not, I guess it shouldn't be sudden because a lot of Caps fans I know have this tendency to do so. But as soon as they start to slide in the standings a bit, don't win as many games as I said, well, people start reaching for the panic button pretty quick. And
that is a cause of the situation that Caps fans have been in for the past decade plus, right? The Caps have always dominated their division for at least a decade at this point. How long has Ovechkin been in the league? 15, 16 seasons, I think. Yeah. Really, since he's joined the league, the Capitals have been a force to be reckoned with in not just their division, but in their conference. So I understand fans when they start seeing, I was surprised when the Ottawa game came around this week and Joe B and Locker started talking about how the Caps were in fourth in the division. I had lost track of the stats. I'd lost track of the standings. And I said, what? They're in fourth place? But at the end of the day, is it really that big of a deal? The Caps every year for the past decade have had a slump around this time leading to the All-Star break. Yeah. It's a consistent thing for them every single year. Guess what? The same thing happened in 2018, and what was the result of that year?
Exactly.
Slumps happen. Like no team is going to be, you know, especially not in the salary cap era, no team is going to be perfect for 82 games.
Well, it's as simple as the law of averages. You're not going to win every single game. You're not even going to win as much as 75% of your games. So to expect that or more is unrealistic. And yet, well, I'm not going to, I can't really name names, but we all know at least one or two people that are like that, that if they lose more than one or two games in some sort of sequence, whether it's in overtime or what. And by the way, I posted something on Twitter from Caps PR. The Caps have not lost in consecutive games in regulation going back before this season started.
That's it's something, fantastic.
It's something like 50-something games that they have not lost consecutively. Going through that many games, they have not lost consecutively in regulation. So I look at that and I'll say, I'll take that. I'm fine with that.
Absolutely. That's insane to think about that your team never loses back-to-back games in regulation. So in the regular season, 82 games, what's the goal here? Accumulate points, right? You're just trying to accumulate points. So even if you lose back-to-back games, if you're winning one of those in overtime or in a shootout, you're gaining a point. And this is a tough division as well. I think a lot of people underestimate the level, the degree of competitiveness that happens in the Metropolitan Division. Some of the hardest teams to play against. You got the Pittsburgh Penguins, you got now the Carolina Hurricanes as of the past couple of years, the Rangers, these are hard teams to play against when you're playing them eight times a year. That was last year, but four plus times a year, that's difficult. And when you're still hanging in there and you're one of the top teams in the league after all that's said and done, sometimes you got to give your team just a little bit of a break and appreciate the magnitude of what they're doing.
When the worst team in your division this year is the New York Islanders, you're in a tough division.
For sure. Definitely agreed. So the game sequence Yeah, it was not what we're, I guess, not what we're used to. Kyle Connor and Cole Perfetti stake the Jets to a 2-0 lead. Well, I think what caught people off guard was how quickly they jumped out to the lead. That is 2 minutes and 20 seconds was the time of the second goal. And of course, Connor's goal was a power play, which kind of
on a weak slash by Orlov. Like that was not much.
Well, more on him in a bit. He got himself into a bit of trouble later on in this game, unbeknownst to us until after the game. But yeah, that and what would eventually happen to him was a total pile of farm manure. That call and the league's call. So yeah, don't get me started on that. But yeah, they fell behind 2-0 on a power play goal and a wrister. But towards the end, of course, as he has often done, the captain rides to the rescue, makes it 2-1, 16:58 in the first with a wrister of his own. And then the guy we just talked about in the second period, 4:26 in, ties it up, Dmitry Orlov with his fifth. And then of all people, I'm of two minds about this guy. Alexei Protas gets his third. And Blake, I'm going to need your help on this. He gets his third. Schultz and Wilson on the assist for this one. Good net front presence on this one. Brings the Caps to a 3-2 lead, 4:15 in the third. I don't hate the guy's game, but then again, as far as the basic numbers, he's not exactly blowing it up. Do the metrics bear out that Protas deserves time? Maybe at least, well, should be a mainstay at least on the third, second or third line, maybe even a shot at the top line.
I think he's been solid. He's always, all of his advanced analytics are on the positive side. And you know, he just watching him play, he's a big boy and he knows how to use his body.
Yeah. He's hard to move off the puck. He's not going to be Tom Wilson and move bodies himself. But once he has the puck, obviously he's hard to move off the puck.
But, he's also very ferocious on the forecheck. You watch him, he just doesn't let up on people, and it's great to see.
Yeah, see, I must be missing that because I don't quite catch that part of his game. Well, the part of his game that I like is along the boards and in front of the net, just like he scored with this goal, that this wraparound that he did was just beautiful. Just the way he handled it and fooled the goalie on it. But I kind of feel like with his skill set, his numbers should be a lot more. I don't know. He should be a lot closer to double digits in all his figures, and he's not.
I think it falls into one of those categories with, like, okay, not to put him on the same level, but one of the categories with Carl Hagen, where he's an asset to the team mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily show itself in the numbers. So this goal is funny because this goal only happens with how tall he is, with how big he is, right?
He's
6 foot. Yeah, he's 6 foot five or six or something stupid tall like that, freakishly tall at that point. But because he, like you said, he's not afraid to go to the net, it creates that chance. And like Blake just said, he is ferocious on the forecheck, not to jump ahead, but Backstrom's goal against Boston in the next game is only happening because of Protas's forecheck.
That's and the one so, I was thinking of. Yeah,
exactly. So you take two instances like this where he's not afraid to get in there and continue plays on because he's able to get on the boards and get into the play, get into the physicality of plays and get to the dirty areas as we all hear. It creates goals like this and like in the next one. So yes, it may not come forward in the stats, but subjectively, I guess I would say I like his play because he brings an element that's not always seen on paper.
So, okay. So I'll defer to Blake once more. What about his individual possession stats? Have you noticed an uptick in that? Because I think Protas is starting to get, he's starting to get a bit more ice time, as at least as far as I've seen, and deservedly so, because I think he's gotten better over the last 5 to 7 games. So I would think at the very least, if his, you know, basic totals aren't coming up, maybe his possession number should be coming up, since he does provide that element to his game. Does that bear out as far as what you're seeing, or at least in your individual observations anyway?
For his last 10 games, his advanced analytics aren't so great, but I also think he had a few bad games, like the whole team had a few bad games, and he's recovering. His numbers are coming back up from that, so I think he's probably been pretty good in the last few games.
Okay, that's fair. So yeah, I don't know. I saw him play live in a preseason game a couple seasons ago, and I thought, obviously, you know, you're playing against, you know, 18, 19 year olds and career minor leaguers and, you know, fifth and sixth liners, but I thought, besides Tom Wilson, he was probably easily the most skilled player out there in that game. And I figured, okay, if this guy sticks, great things are going to happen. So I don't know. I guess I'm guilty of not tempering those expectations, but I kind of feel like he should be trending in that direction where, you know, perhaps he might even be the next Kuznetsov, where you can expect 20 goals and upwards of 50 to 70 assists out of him or points out of him going forward.
I don't think anyone would be surprised if we see high numbers from him going forward, especially with the, as you just pointed out, the increased ice time. And that's the key, right? The more time you get, the better you're going to get. At least in my opinion, that's how the case is. And ice time is earned. And he is earning his ice time with the play that he's showing, especially this week. I think he had a very good week.
Agreed.
So I think I would not be surprised if down the road, even if the rest of the season, if we see him score, you know, what was that? His third goal of the season?
Is
that what
you said? Third of the season.
Mm-hmm. So even if we see in the next 42 games or however many is left, I think we're down below 40 at this point. If we see 5 more goals, 10 more goals out of him, I would not be surprised.
That would be fine. That would be fine, because that would be consistent with the minutes that he has been getting, which are average to below average for a third liner. So I would be more than satisfied with that if that's the total he ends up with.
I don't think I'm on board with giving him a lot more second and first line time, as you mentioned earlier. I think his role as far as what he contributes to the team right now is definitely more of that bottom six. Unlike, let's say, top line Hathaway, which we saw quite a bit this week, which I loved. I actually thought it was great. So, I mean, everyone has a role. Everyone has something they can bring to the team. But I think it's important to have bottom six. And I think the negative connotation that goes with bottom six should not be there. It's a role that needs to be played. Jay Beagle is a prime example. Jay Beagle was a fourth line center forever and ever and ever, and he was crucial to the Caps winning the Cup. It should not be looked down upon to be a bottom six. I think his role is critical, and I think he can really thrive doing that.
And when you're a rookie, you have to start somewhere. And I don't think the element, I won't say who they are. They should know who they are, but I the element that says, well, play the rookies just because, quite understands that. So, you know, I think in time, speaking of this game anyway, the guy that got the game winner probably had to learn this lesson over too long a course of his first part of the career, but eventually he did earn a spot on the top six. And that, of course, I'm talking about Tom Wilson, who got the game winner in OT. Not to ignore Pierre-Luc Dubois, who tied the game with just over a minute left to send it into overtime. But 26 seconds into overtime, basically Evgeny Kuznetsov and Tom Wilson basically took over the game from Puck Drop. and said, okay, we're not fooling around this time. And they Kuznetsov made a brilliant charge to the net and did enough to keep Connor Hellebuck busy, as I would say. And Tom Wilson basically picked up the garbage and threw it out. But if that's what it takes to win the game, I'm all for it. And he put away the wrister.
My favorite part about this OT is the shots on goal in OT is 2-0 caps. And when I saw that, I went, wait, what? Yeah, they marked the first shot that actually banks off of Tom Wilson's skate and gives Connor the initial save. They counted that as a shot. The second shot is the one that went in, the follow-up. I find that quite funny.
And that's, well, it's funny, but it's also true. And I think it, what I liked about it was that, and we discussed this on last week's episode, for once, they approached the OT like they were playing to win and not playing like they didn't want to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for the double negative there. So speaking of shots on goal, if you look at the by period breakdown, again, yes, they fell behind, but the Caps got 11 shots on goal themselves in the period. So they were busy enough. They were trying enough, if that's even a phrase. So it's not as if they weren't, you know, it's not as if they were passive. There's another game that happened this week where I think we might have figured that they, I don't know, took some Nitol or something, some sort of sleep aid before the game. But not so in this game. And the average was pretty close to double digits per period. So it's not as if they weren't active. They just, the Jets just got a jump on them with, you know, circumstances basically, and being better, just that much quicker to the puck. But like the both of you pointed out, they play better when they fall behind. There's the urgency kicks in, and it's, you know, it quantifies itself in the result, but not in the how to get there type of figure. So that's still the part that's the head scratcher. But
the Caps trusted their system. They stuck to it. I mentioned this earlier. This was very much a game where imagine if those first two goals don't go in. The Caps would be talking about this game differently. We would have said that the Caps dominated this game, because the Caps, in my mind, even though they didn't win shots every single period, I feel like they controlled the flow of the game much, much more than the Jets did.
And the analytics agree. Like after the second goal was scored, the Caps just went on a tear. And then, so like they spent 58 minutes of that game holding the expected goals and Corsi advantage. Like it, like they really did dominate aside from 2 minutes. And it just so happened that those were the 2 minutes where two goals got scored.
Give credit to the coaching staff. I mean, the coaching staff had a plan, right? And if the players buy into the plan and execute the plan and trust the plan, things will turn out okay. And if they don't turn out okay, it's not always the fault of someone in particular. Sometimes the other team's plan was just better. But this was a case where the Caps fell behind two goals early, very early, what, 2.5 minutes in. And they were able to systematically stay in the game and end up winning the game and end up giving us our first OT win of the season, which felt incredible.
I would wholeheartedly agree. This was one of those times where I risked causing injury to myself, jumping up out of my chair when Wilson put that goal away. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, but I was overjoyed at the same time. It was great to see the Caps, you know, get that monkey off their back and finally win one in OT. So I kind of figured that would have some sort of a carryover effect, but then the league in its infinite wisdom decided to step in and deplete the lineup even further than it already was. Let's see, we had Carlson out at that time and Sherry still out on COVID protocol each. And then the league decided, well, Dmitry Orlov purposely need Nikolai Ehlers, which was untrue. If you look at the replay, Orlov is clearly, he is steadying himself. He is in a stance where he is making himself sturdy. So he himself is not knocked off the puck. It was momentum that carried him into Ehlers. There was no intent to injure.
Was this even called a penalty?
No, it was not.
Exactly.
But Ehlers was screaming about it. I disagree a little here. I don't think he did it on purpose, obviously. I don't think Orlov is out to hurt anybody, but I also think he was being a little reckless, just sticking his leg out there.
Well, he was doing it more to brace himself so that he wouldn't fall down himself, and two, he wasn't going to lose sight of the puck or the ability to trace the puck. I don't think maybe he could have positioned himself a little bit better, but hindsight's 20/20, and the speed of the game, you don't always have control over the direction you're going in. If the momentum of the puck or the game takes you in that certain direction, if that makes any sense. I still don't think there really was any intent, and the league is still consistently getting it wrong in that they're punishing the end result and not the intent. Stuff is going to happen in the middle of a game regardless. Players are going to get hurt. You've got people running into each other anywhere from 10 to 35 miles an hour. People are going to get hurt. You've got boards, you've got hard ice, you've got immovable objects, you've got steel. People are going to get hurt. And I think sometimes the league overreacts, just to stay on my soapbox for another minute. They overreact and see someone hurt and they think, okay, well, we're going to prevent players from getting hurt if we hand out these punishments, even if they're piddling punishments, to show that we're doing our job. And I really think that the league office has that mentality, and the sooner they get rid of that mentality, I think we're really going to start to see eventually maybe the actual illegal hits kind of filed out. But that's just a pipe dream of mine.
I think the mentality from the league here is correct as far as the intent behind what they're doing. As you just pointed out, the intent is to do away with injuries, right? They don't want guys getting hurt. Nobody wants a hockey player getting hurt. I don't care what team you play for. I don't care if you're Sidney Crosby, right? I don't like seeing guys get hurt, right? Because at the end of the day, we're watching a game. We're watching professional entertainers. And the only way that continues is that everyone stays healthy. So the intent behind the league here is correct. They want to do away with bad things happening. However, and now this might be me putting a foot in on either side of the fence here. However, I think they can jump to conclusions. They can jump to an end result way too quickly. Now, I didn't watch the video from the Department of Player Safety. So correct me if I'm wrong, but has Orlov ever been suspended in his history in the NHL?
My knowledge, no.
Right. Yeah, so once. He has once.
Yeah.
Do you know how long it was for, Blake?
I can't remember what it was. It was something different, though.
But so for something that wasn't penalized in the game and someone who's been not a repeat offender, I guess you can say once he's been maybe suspended, but that's not a repeat offender.
Right.
Two games for something that was completely unintentional and maybe slightly reckless as far as his positioning, but definitely not intentional. I think suspending him two games is beyond what it should be. This is definitely an act of trying to prevent things from trying to discourage players from doing things like this in the future. That is all this comes down to.
Right. And I get that. And I go back to my base argument in that I don't think there was any intent, even the slightest bit, even subconsciously.
There wasn't.
I don't pretend to be a mind reader, but you have a lower level of punishment and that being the max fine. So if they wanted to do that, then they could have just simply fined him as they have so many other players.
I think they've given out much bigger suspensions for also unintentional knee on knee. I could be wrong on that, but I think I've seen bigger suspensions for guys who had, you know, histories, even if it clearly wasn't intentional and they just took a wrong turn.
Yeah, like Tom Wilson. They obviously, they go after people who are repeat offenders. That is 100%. I think the stats will 100% show that. I do think that this should have been a fine, a max fine. Two games, I think, is too much for a completely unintentional, maybe slightly reckless on positioning play.
I could look. A fine probably is more appropriate than a suspension here, but I also do think it should have been called a penalty on the play, because even if it's unintentional, like if I swing my stick for the puck and miss and trip you, I'm not trying to trip you, but I still get a tripping penalty. Like just because I didn't mean to ram you with my knee doesn't mean that I don't still get a penalty for that.
Right. Intention does not dictate whether or not it's a penalty, but intention should come into play when disciplinary action is doled out. And I think the league went just a little too far.
Right. So I think had there been a call on the ice, I don't think there would have been anything more. There probably would not have been even a review, because generally they say, okay, well, the refs caught it. They acted on it. Done.
Right.
But because there was no action on the ice or reaction on the ice, then they felt like they had, again, they somebody's got to do their job and review this thing and then react accordingly, not act accordingly, but react. I'm using that word on purpose because that's what it is. I'm going to call a spade here. But I guess at the end of the day, it is what it is. We lost Orlov for two games, and it might have been in part a reason for the next game's result. I'm going to segue into that against the Bruins. So back home, I believe this was a home game. No. This was in Boston against the Bruins. Okay, so to jump to the scoring summary real quick here, Kuznetsov with his 13th brings the Caps to the league. Ovechkin and Van Riemsdyk on the assist for that one. And then it was the David Pastrnak show, him getting two goals within about 3.5 minutes of each other, his 17th and 18th.
And, Pastrnak, who's that? I've never heard of him before.
I kind of thought, go ahead.
He's the guy who correctly said that Tom Wilson is the best goal scorer in the league. That's what I
mean. That's right. I forgot about that.
Can't thank him enough for that comment. But he's also the guy that going into this game, I thought was a rumbling volcano, in that he had something of a slow start to the year, but had just started to get on a roll. So I kind of figured him to play a factor, if not have a big game. And that, of course, played out. And our lack of our depleted defense probably did not help in containing him. And unfortunately, I turned out to be right in his getting two goals, and of course, one of them being a power play. And yeah, so they jump out to a 2-1 lead, and then who should tie it towards the end of the second? But Lars Eller with his 7th, assisted by Connor McMichael, his 7th assist on a wrister, and this was surprisingly a close game. I anticipated not, as Willem Bagas said last week, a wiping of the floor by the Bruins, but I wasn't sure how competitive this would be, given, as I said, the depleted defense and Orlov being lost and the lack of flow within the lineup. I didn't resign myself to a loss, but I just didn't think the Caps would be as competitive. This was a surprisingly competitive game to me. What did you both see?
This game was definitely special teams lopsidedness, is what it came down to in my mind. Okay, so this is all definitely opinionated, but 0-4 against 2-3, as far as power play effectiveness goes, was the difference in this game. Now, that being said, that's not to say that the Caps are at the level of compete at which Boston is playing right now. So from a very objective level, I'm going to say the Caps cannot handle Boston at all right now, as far as the two teams head-to-head playing. It was shown, what was that, last week, 7-3 or whatever that was last week, 2 weeks ago. And it was shown in this game, maybe not as prominently in this game because it was such a closer score. But watching gameplay, the Caps have no answer for the Boston's forecheck. The Bruins forecheck, pardon me. The Bruins forecheck is relentless. Now, you could chalk it up to a slightly depleted defense. And by slightly depleted, I mean we were missing our two top D-men. Orlov to suspension, and Carlson was missing his second or third game due to COVID protocol. So Jensen, and then, yeah, exactly. Jensen gets hurt in this game, right, and that depletes us even more. So you could chalk it up to our defense being depleted, but either way, the Caps have no answer for the Boston Bruins forecheck right now. We cannot get out of our zone cleanly. We cannot get through the neutral zone cleanly. We cannot set anything up cleanly. In my opinion, guys, this game is only as close as it is because of a miracle. I think this game should have been just like last game based off the play that I saw on the ice.
Yeah. The Bruins, I mean, on top of massively dominating special teams, which is, you know, hugely important to the outcome of the game, they also dominated 5-on-5. The fact that we got three goals out of that game is insane.
I think it's a miracle. I really do. I don't think this should have been a one goal game, but the fact that it was, I'll take it because it looks better on paper. But those guys went into the locker room knowing they got beat, and they got beat bad.
Well, let me ask you this then. So do you think had the Capitals had the benefit of a quote unquote full lineup? And I'll add this caveat to that. Backstrom being 100% on top of that. So you have that. You have Oshie in his normal spot, and he's 100%. You have your quote-unquote regulars. You have your full complement of defensemen. Do you think that would have made the difference at all?
No.
Not at all.
I think Boston's the better team right now. I think it's a system thing. I really do. So Boston, their heavy forecheck, the system comes down to how many guys they send in on their forecheck. So the Caps have a lot of trouble. Again, this is all opinionated, so, right? This is just my opinion. This is just how I see the game.
Well, it's opinion. It's you're qualifying it, but if I can kind of play both sides of the argument at the same time.
Yep.
You're basing it on sheer observation, which is what I do a lot. So I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah. So based off my observation, the Caps have a lot of time or a lot of trouble a lot of the time going D to D and getting out of their zone when the opponents, no matter whom it is, bring more than one forechecker. Okay. So take, for example, Schultz has the puck. He's behind the net. A lot of guys will sit behind the net. They'll wait for the change. They'll wait for the play to open up and they'll send the puck up the ice, right? If the opponent brings two forecheckers, for some reason, that throws a huge wrench in the Caps' entire outbreak. They don't know how to get out of their zone and up the ice. We didn't see that in just this game. We saw it also in the Ottawa game, hence the shot count. We'll get there. But when the Boston forecheck leans into them with two plus forecheckers, they can't get out of their zone. And I think even with a full lineup, even with a healthy D, they have a lot of trouble. And I think that's something that just needs to be addressed on a larger scale across the team, across the system.
So, Blake, I'm going to defer to you. I don't know if you have the figures handy, but do the possession numbers for this game and or the earlier game with Boston bear out what Brad is saying?
Here's what I'll say. I think if we go full strength in terms of full defense, Carlson and Orlov being back, and we don't lose Jensen, I don't think that's enough. But I do think if we had had full strength, 100% Backstrom, Oshie and Sherry, I mean, that's 4.5 guys. right there. That's a lot. That's tough to overcome.
That's half your power play too, right, Blake? I mean, that's half your power play too. Oshie and Backstrom being perfect. That's that power play. That's that special teams we were just talking about.
Yeah. So missing, you know, 4.5 guys. I think that game very well could have gone differently if we had been true full power, but you know, I don't think it was just missing the defense. I don't think getting just the defenders. I don't think Orlov not getting suspended fixes that. I don't think Carlson not getting COVID fixes that. I think we full power though. I think we're much more competitive in that game. And based on how the luck went, I think that means we win. Because luck was on our side in that game. We just weren't good enough to capitalize on it.
Right.
Well, it's funny you say that because the ending to the game would not have spoken to that. Now, we're actually in the third period as far as the recap. So Jake DeBrusque stakes them to the lead, 9:41 in the third, unassisted with a wrister. Just a bit of a sidebar here. I've actually had my eye on this guy for a while, and there was a bit of rumbling that he wanted out. And I don't know. He's on my sort of subconscious wish list, but I don't think it's going to happen. But I've always considered him one of the best young middle tier forwards in the league.
Is DeBrusque you're talking about?
Jake DeBrusque, yes.
The latest news is that the Rangers are looking at him for the trade.
I would not be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised at that he ends up there or to a top tier team. So, yeah, I hope they don't get into a bidding war a la Kevin Shattenkirk. oh boy, yeah.
Oh man,
was that a disaster? But. Yeah, I would like to have him on the team, just not at too bad of a cost.
Agreed.
Because he's struggling a bit this year, and I think that's because he's unhappy with the structure and his playing time. But if you put him in the right situation, he will thrive, and I think he would do well here. But I just don't see it happening. I would love to see it happen. I just don't see it happening. So that's all I'm going to say about that. And then very quickly afterward, and this is why I get what you're saying, Brad, about the Caps being basically outplayed. But, and I get that this is a bit of a microcosm, but you're counting, let's see, 19 plus 17, 36 seconds later, the resiliency. Nick Backstrom gets his first of the year on the wrister, and this was the goal you guys were talking about, where Protus in
effect. Yes, sir.
Hounding the guy, the Bruins player trying to break out of his zone, essentially creates this play. He turns it over to Wilson, who finds Backstrom for the wrister, tie game, and there's life again. And
we need more of this. We need more of what Protus just did here. If you look at this goal, again, this is just pure observation, but it looks to me like Wilson has given up on this forecheck. And it looks like he's starting to turn away, like he's going to switch his mind to defense, right? He's expecting the play to start moving up ice because he's expecting us to lose the puck. Protus does not give up on this play. And when Protus's forecheck ends up turning the puck over, Wilson comes screaming back into the zone and ends up getting the puck and sending it to Backstrom for the goal. The fact that Protus does not have a point on this goal sucks because this goal is purely because of him.
True enough. And if there was a way that this classic, one of those cases where if there was a way to award him a point, yes, definitely. But this is one of those cases where, well, I mean, he would get credit as far as Corsi for sure, because it resulted in a scoring chance and a shot attempt. But no, not as far as the big numbers. So yeah, you're right. As long as we get more of this from him and others who don't easily give up the play,
right?
Then they'll be fine, at least in the long term. But getting to what I was mentioning earlier about the ending of the game, well, we all know what happened. Charlie McAvoy with his sixth on the power play. That power play, how did it come about? Well, it came about because Nick Dowd, was unfortunate in sticking his stick out and having Derek Forbort hold onto it and fall over it. You heard me right. That's what I saw. The man held onto his stick and fell over it. You can't change my mind. And unfortunately, yes, he got called for it. And I guess, look, I get that the refs, they see it. They all, from their angle, they see guy with a stick out, opposing player falls over it. They have to call the trip. I get that, but I thought there was this unwritten rule where you don't try to affect the outcome of the game, but they did. Call me a homer, but that's what I saw.
I don't like blaming a game on the refs, but you're 100% correct.
Well, see,
it's a cheeky
see, now,
call that should not have been called.
We did say, well, I said, though, in various rooms that this one play was not why they lost. They lost for a variety of reasons.
Right. So this
My
is a game.
My only argument is that this call was bogus in and of itself, but it's not why they lost.
Correct. Dude, 100%. So you're 100% right. This call is incorrect. And hockey is one of the hardest games to referee. It really is. It's so fast paced and you're on ice, right? You have to be extremely proficient to put yourself in a position to see everything as a referee. And it's very difficult to officiate. And there's only two refs. There's only two officials who can call penalties. Not like in football where there's like, it feels like a dozen guys who can call penalties. The thing is, this is a game that the Capitals, in my opinion, deserved to lose, and they ended up losing. Now, the reason they lost it was losing to a power play goal in the very, very last minute of the game on a penalty that shouldn't have been called a penalty, and that sucks. But the end result is probably what it should have been based on what the play was on the ice the whole game.
Agreed. I agree with that.
Agreed, 100%. But it was just unfortunate in the way it ended, because I think some fans got a false sense of, well, if had you not had X, you would not have Y or Z. And that if you were watching the whole game, I think you would know better than that. But to kind of put a nice, neat bow on this, if the Caps should face Boston in the playoffs,
dear God, no.
Would that be kind of close the book, put the jelly in the freezer, it's all over, see you next year?
Never. No. Of course not. Like, as a fan, I have to say, no, I'm never going to just dismiss it. Because I'm always going to, I always have in the back of my head that the Caps are going to win a game. That's always the mentality. Now, Blake, you can correct me on this, and you can say that the stats say completely otherwise. The Bruins do own us in the playoffs right now. I mean, not even just last year, but previously. I think we've beat them once in the playoffs in the past however many decade or 15 years, whatever. Like,
well,
that.
I think we've only played them the two times that you're talking about. I think it's 50-50.
Yeah.
So take 50-50 and then give the advantage to the team with the momentum. That might be the case, but I'm always going to think that the Caps are going to win. Never doubt in my mind that they're going to win.
But as you say, it's going to take a major adjustment to answer or come up with some sort of answer to, at the very least, their forechecking game.
Yes, it's a system thing. It's not a mentality. It's not one team lording over another team like the Penguins did us for a decade. It's not that. It's a system, and it can be addressed. And I think, as you pointed out earlier, getting our defense back to full health and having everyone is the first step. Doesn't necessarily mean we're going to insta win against the Bruins once we get Orlov back and Carlson back and Jensen's healthy and then Backstrom's healthy and Sherry's there and Oshie's there. I don't know, but it's a good first step.
Well, I think so. And one last note to this game, as I like to do, the shots on goal per period. Well, I think your argument that it took a miracle to make the Caps competitive. Yeah, if you look at the shots on goal, I would buy into that argument. 10-5 disadvantage first period, 10-6 disadvantage second period, 13-6 in the third. 17 shots on goal, and they scored 3 times.
Yep.
So had they pushed the play just maybe a little bit more, it might have even been that more competitive. Maybe. But we'll never know. Because because maybe it was some combination of puck luck and a miracle, or you know, something that
what stinks about this so much to me is that before last season and this season, we were really, really good against Boston. Like really good.
Win like 14 in a row against them.
You beat me to it, man. We had such a great record against them leading up until last season, and I don't know what happened. Yeah, if you have the numbers, by all means, take it away. But especially at home against Boston, we were really, really good.
Well, I'll add one thing to that, and I'm not going to say this was the key element. This may be more of a coincidence, if anything, like if such a thing exists. But for the majority of those games, Tuukka Rask was in goal for whatever that's worth.
Yep.
I'm going to add to that. I think we owned Tuukka Rask, and I also think Holtby owned the Bruins.
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
It's both. It's both guys.
Fair enough.
There you have it.
Yep. Fair enough.
There you have it. Okay, so we're going to move on to the last game of the week. Recap that real quick. So the way this game started, I wasn't upset, but I was resigned a bit because, again, something of a depleted lineup. Also, I thought maybe since this was a bottom tier opponent, maybe they approached the game with a bit of, maybe we don't have to give our level best or anything close to it, and we
chip on their shoulder,
get out of there with enough of a half-assed effort to come away with 2 points. Not so. All you have to do is look at the shot totals for period one. Five. That's the fingers on one hand. 5 for the Caps. And I'm using my other hand. You can't see it. And 3 for the Senators. One of which resulted in a power play goal. And that was scored by the perennial, minute munching king, Thomas Shabbat Scott. Take that reference and run with it. If you know what that's all about. And immediately we're all like, and this, of course, again, 82 seconds into the game, another quick start for the other team. And we're all thinking, okay, here we go again. And here's another allegedly soft goal.
Nope. I disagree. I did not think that.
Well, I'm saying what the quote unquote majority is saying.
I'll be the tiebreaker. I actually wasn't able to watch this game. I'll go pull up the highlights right now, and I'll be the judge.
There you go.
Fair enough. While you're doing that, I would say that Vanecek was totally screened on this goal and had absolutely no chance to stop it.
Nothing to do with goaltending, 100%. And I got into a slight argument with someone online, which is a terrible sentence. But someone said something about, damn it, Vanecek, you know, this and that. I said, this goal has 0% to do with goaltending. And they said it had everything to do with goaltending. And I couldn't entertain any more of the conversation after he said that, because what do you do in this situation as a goaltender? Nothing. You can't do anything. All you can do is get lucky. And he didn't get lucky.
7 words. You can't stop what you can't see.
Thank you. I can't see, or you. He was screened. It was slightly deflected, and it was a screen on a slight deflection. What more do you want from the guy?
It was the worst kind of deflection. Deflection from his own player, own defense.
I don't know what anyone else wants from goaltending in that situation, and that might segue into our conversation about.
It will.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely, because I myself had a similar such discussion with someone else
Then I won't jump the gun on that conversation.
I have seen the goal now, and there are one, two, three, four guys in his line of sight between.
Thank you, Blake. Thank you.
I was like, that's close. And then it showed an angle from the shooter's view, and you can't even see Vanacek.
All you need to look at is Vanacek's reaction. Vanacek didn't even know if the puck was past him yet or not. Like that's all you need to see. The dude didn't see the puck come off the blade. That's no goaltending his fault.
No, not at all. And I didn't think for at least when I had a chance to check out the replay, I didn't think it was his fault from the initial view. But when I had a chance to check out the replay a couple times, I was convinced. It was just. Sometimes it just bears down to puck luck, and that's all that happened. Now, what I was disappointed in was, well, the overall lack of effort, and I don't know. You're hungry for a win. This is the ideal team to get it against, and they just did not come out with the effort. I think Craig Lachlan, in between periods, went as far as saying that they were skating in mud, looked like they were skating in mud.
They just looked out of sync, right? Like it wasn't a situation against Boston where we were, in my opinion, getting severely out forechecked and outplayed. It was just like anytime they did get the puck, they couldn't connect passes. They couldn't make plays clean. It just felt like everything was a half a step off, and it was enough to give the Senators the opening. Now, that said, the Senators only had three shots on net in the first period. So it's not like this was a lopsided, completely one way, one team dominating the other. But the Caps' five shots only came in the last 2.5-ish minutes of the first period.
And only as a result of their being on the power play. They hadn't even registered a shot on an actual shot on goal until they got onto the power play.
I don't think they had a 5-on-5 shot on net the entire first period, right? I think all five shots were the power play.
I think you're right. I don't think they did have they might have had an attempt, but not anything that was actually made it on net. I told my wife that and she accused me of lying.
not the first time, right?
Yeah. I showed her the stat and, it was true that they hadn't registered a shot until 17 something into the game when they got the power play. And it was, you can chalk that up to a bad approach to the game. And, I get that if you're in a depleted lineup, you're kind of nursing some bumps and bruises, maybe you take your foot off the gas a little bit, but maybe you don't. Not if you're starting to hurt for points a bit. Not if you're getting into a bit of a race as far as points.
I think the out of syncness is I guess I just said it, but that's what it comes down to for me. It just seemed like the guys weren't touching passes. They weren't getting clean entries, clean neutral zone plays. They just weren't quite in step with each other. And if you had asked me, so the last game against Boston, that was a game that we deserved to lose, that we ended up losing, maybe not for the correct reason, but we ended up losing it because we deserved to lose it. After the first period, I would have said we deserved to lose this game based off of the play that I saw on the ice.
Well, I would take that a step further and say, had they continued the overall approach, I won't say effort, but approach to the game, had they carried that over into the second and third periods, because they did ramp things up in the second, they just didn't get the result they wanted,
right?
Then yes, they would have certainly deserved to lose the game. Now, speaking of the second period, old friend Zach Sanford got his seventh to make it 2-0 Ottawa, 6:07 into the second.
Wasn't he a Cap?
He was. Yep. He was. They traded him to St. Louis.
Didn't you want to come there?
Yes, he did. He was just traded to Ottawa this year. So he was on the 2019 Cup team. I was kind of surprised they let him go. But he gets his seventh. And it's 2-0. I didn't think the Caps were out of it because, and I don't want to be, I underestimated Ottawa too, but I knew Ottawa's defense was not quite as experienced, shall we say.
They're young.
And yeah, they might be very fast, know how to carry the puck, but they're very young as far as learning how to cover their own end. So I knew the Caps had a chance as long as, and Brad, you mentioned this a couple times, and it was, this was something of a carbon copy of the Winnipeg game,
right?
But they won out because, as you said, they stuck to their system. They stayed believing in their system. They stuck to the game plan and decided to press more of the game instead of chasing the game and press the attack. And they got their defense moving, as they normally do. And it shows mainly in Blake, you might be able to corroborate this a bit, but it shows mainly in the, well, it's, they got 16 shots on goal, which I can only imagine it's probably 1.5 times more than that as far as shot attempts
in the second,
in the second period. And then they stayed, it slowed down a bit in the third, but it's, you know, it stayed fairly consistent. And well, okay. So
that pretty those much nailed it.
Yeah. So, and then because of that consistency, well, who should take over the game, ride to the rescue? But as he often does, the captain, Ovechkin, his 28.
Captain,
my
captain.
Yeah, captain, yes. My captain.
Captain Jack will get you high tonight. But this captain made it 2-1, 1:39 in the third with a nice snapper. Both goals were snapshots. Just that quick release he's got, even at his age, just
from right in front. I love that we're seeing goals not from his typical spot in the past year or two. I just love that he's scoring from anywhere at this point.
Right. You can't see it, but I'm doing air quotes with my fingers. Our coverage marvels always at how he's adapted his game and is quick to point out that he has become versatile as far as how he has scored. He's no longer that one trick pony scoring from that left circle, although he can still do that. And this is why, another sidebar soapbox moment, this is why I thoroughly enjoy, my wife and I, we thoroughly enjoy Joe B and Locker and the whole NBCSN Washington gang, Alan May, Alexa Landestoy, and all them, the way they cover the game, because you don't get that kind of coverage when you're stuck watching it on ESPN, Hulu, TNT, what have you. You just don't get that kind of analysis from them. And I'm not going to knock them too badly, but, you know, that I think we're kind of spoiled with, you know, the way our guys do that. Because you get the in-depth coverage, whereas with a national point of view, not so much, because that's maybe not so much their job to do that.
It's a treat. It's a treat to listen to.
It is a treat.
Night.
Most certainly.
I can't believe they haven't been poached by national. I mean, they absolutely could be doing ESPN.
Wait, don't say that. Now they're going to. Ah, man. You just jinxed it.
It's funny. It's funny because Joe Beninati. You guys might remember this, but when the NHL landed the contract with, you know, what was then the Outdoor Life Network, and then it switched over to Versus Network, they had Joe Beninati slated as one of their national, you know, play-by-play announcers. And then
I did not know that.
Yeah, for and he did that for 2, 3, 4 seasons, and then they just, without explanation, they just dropped him. I'm not really sure why, but
those chumps,
their loss, our gain,
right?
Seriously.
So, but I agree. He's deserving of a national spot, but, hey, you know, we're glad to hang on to him, for sure. So he ends up tying the game with, 2 goals, as Brad said, from positioning himself in front of the net. And it worked out so that, yeah, and even Ottawa's coach, DJ Smith, admitted later after the game, yeah, you don't leave a guy like Ovechkin all alone in front of the net.
Did he say that in his post-interview?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
He knows.
And he also had interesting words to say about the resulting overtime goal by Nicklas Backstrom. Yes, you heard me right. Not one, but two overtime wins in 1 week for our Washington
economy.
What in this economy?
At this hour?
What?
So I'll get right to it. One of the prettiest goals, probably the, if there was a candidate for prettiest goal of the year, yes, this would definitely be it. Basically, Nick Backstrom picks the pocket of the Ottawa defenseman and strides towards the net, takes his time, flattens the puck, lifts it to the shelf, the backhand shelf, and puts it away, 113 in for the game winner. And 2 points for our Washington Capitals. Maybe some out there would say not necessary, shouldn't have been necessary to go to overtime. But my answer to that was, well, okay, but it's a loser point for a team. What exactly are they going to do with that?
We don't lose anything by giving them a point.
Catch the third worst team in the conference.
Right.
No.
Conference. I'm not worried. Not even ours.
Yeah. I'm not worried about giving a loser point to a bottom third team. So, but yeah, Nick Backstrom. Yeah. I think he's this and this. I mentioned this in our Facebook room. This is a great indicator in that he is getting closer and closer to being 100% back to his old self again.
I sure hope so.
I'm, and that can only be good news, not for the overall offensive strategy, but certainly the power play.
I'm going to fawn over the technical aspect of this goal for a second here. He not only does he strip the puck, right? That's a great play. Off mm-hmm. of, I think he actually stripped it from Norris, who is one of their top goal scorers on their team. He waits and he waits and he waits. It felt like he waited ages to dump that puck off, and he gets the goaltender down on his face, and with zero angle on that net, he confidently, like, just with the greatest confidence of a feathered backhander. And I don't know if you guys play hockey. Backhanders like that are not easy. Backhanders in general are not easy. Yeah. They're hard to control.
They're
very hard to control. Toughest shot in the game, exactly. It's why it's so hard for goaltenders to save against the backhanded shots, because they're unpredictable, right?
Even the shooter doesn't know where it's going.
Exactly. But he has zero angle on this shot, and so confidently, so effortlessly roofs it to the far back corner of a no angle shot. This is, like you just said, Gil, probably the ultimate sign that we are maybe finally getting our Nicklas Backstrom, our 100% Backstrom back. And is I lost my absolute my manure.
Say it.
My shit when that goal went in, and I upset my wife because we were both laying in bed and she was asleep and I was watching it and I screamed and she got upset. I woke her up, but I went insane because it just was it was one of the most beautiful goals I've seen, not even just this season, but in a long, long time.
Absolutely. And so if I can add to that, of course, it is the hardest shot to pull off because there's not much of the quote unquote banana curve, but it's a backhand shot, meaning you're on the reverse side. You're on the curve side. You're lifting the puck on the banana side, the curve side of the stick. So you have even less control than you normally would if you were shooting forehand. So the fact that he made it look so easy,
effortless. It was so effortless for him. It was like he was throwing that puck into the net with his hand. That's how easy it looked.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just probably one of the most joyful moments so far this year. I don't think I'm overstating that because I think the team has kind of just has missed something overall without his consistent presence. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think it's cause to panic, even though they haven't gotten the results that they have been these last 2 weeks, that, you know, they've been losing more games and losing out on points these last 2 weeks. If the trade-off is, you know, finding out what your flaws are now as opposed to the playoffs, I'll take that. If the trade-off on top of that is getting some of your healthy, you know, banged up players healthy again, I'll take that as well.
That's why I can't wait to get to the All-Star break. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
Because it'll give everyone a chance to level out and to take a breath and maybe get some of these guys who are hurt, mainly Oshie. I can't wait to get him back. Also, Mantha, is he out for the rest of the season? Have we had word on him? I mean,
no update on him.
And yeah, that's upsetting.
Sounds like the last end of the season.
Yeah, the last thing I heard about Mantha was it was about a week ago. I saw a tweet where or some sort of report where Laviolette said he looks in on him every other day, and he pretty much said, well, he's not even close to being back on the ice yet. So I would not be surprised if they shut him down for the year.
Well, it's probably the smart move. But outside of that, though, get to the All-Star break and let guys who are on COVID protocol or out for whatever reason, get them healthy. And let's get our team back. That's the biggest thing right now. We haven't seen our team on the ice this season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. A 110% agree with that. So now that we've covered all the games for this year, this past week, well, this half year anyway, so we're at the halfway mark, and the trade deadline is about, a month away, I want to say, usually in early to mid March, or end of February, depending upon how they built the schedule. And suddenly, well, not, I don't want to say suddenly, but a bone of contention among a lot of Caps fans, and I talked about this some last week. It was touched off by an article by Tarik El-Bashir, is the fact that the Caps goalie tandem could use some improving, and as they stand now, probably won't carry the team past anything more than, say, a first round or maybe even a second round appearance, and that they really ought to look for an upgrade in net. Now, I'll start the discussion by saying this. I'm not going to be unrealistic and say, well, no, that's totally wrong, because I have seen the numbers. Yes, they are towards the bottom of the league, the both of them, Samsonov and Vanecek, as far as save percentage and goals against average. So I'm not gonna delude myself into thinking they have the numbers, but my argument is that, as I said last week, they are the now and the future, and I'm not too big a believer in mortgaging the future, because they've done that so many times at too much of a cost, and if you do that with a goalie, then it's not as easy to replace, even if you get a rental. You know, to what end? Yes, the end is the cup, of course, but, you know, I don't really think a veteran established goalie is going to really make all that much difference, even though, yes, you need a goalie to steal a game in the playoffs. I get that. But in my mind, I think ultimately, unless the price is right, we stick with what we got.
I think so. We're not going to be able to keep Samsonov and Vanecek both long-term anyway, because either they're going to get good and become expensive, or they're going to stay bad and we're going to have to move on from them. I also think it would be beneficial to, so if we get rid of one, it would be beneficial to keep, to have a veteran to mentor the other one. I think not having an adult in the goalie room, especially since we lost Mitch Korn, I really think having an adult in the goalie room would actually really help our situation.
I buy into that, but if it's only for, say, 20 plus games, I don't think that's going to be enough. They're talking about, the talk I'm hearing is that we go for a rental, say a Marc-Andre Fleury is probably the number one name. And look, I hate to disqualify that, but I think too much of that is, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we had a guy that we had so much trouble with in the playoffs playing for us?
It would be a little going out for Halak, which is the most rent-free thing that has ever happened in the history of sports.
Oh, you got that right.
Okay. Here, I'll put my two cents in here now. Yes, you have to have let me start over. It would be nice to have a veteran goaltender, if not starting, at least there to have his voice in the ear of whoever you're starting. My argument to that is two words: Braden Holtby. Braden Holtby did not start for this organization as a veteran goaltender that we brought in. He was a young goaltender that we farmed and brought up and curated and worked into the system. He eventually became our number one, and he eventually went on to win the cup. Now, that being said, I actually disagree with you, Gil. I don't think a goaltender has to steal games in the playoffs. And I think Braden Holtby is an example of that. I don't think Holtby stole a game per se the entire 2018 playoffs. Did he have a couple great saves? Let's look at, what was that, game two, the save? Yes, he did. But I don't think he stole an entire game. I don't think you need to have a veteran come in, especially on a rental. I don't like rentals. I don't like the idea of it. I like the idea that we have a young goaltender that we can curate in our system and bring him up, work him into the same system on the NHL level, and have him be a stud for us. Now, that being said, we have two goaltenders that are in that situation right now: Vitek Vanecek, Ilya Samsonov. I don't think the two goaltender system is working right now. And I think that's what it comes down to for me. Pick one. We don't need to go get a rental. We don't need to bring in a veteran voice. We don't need any of that right now. We have two fantastic goaltenders who maybe the numbers don't look great right now. And I get that. Gil, you just talked about it. The numbers are towards the bottom of the league, but I don't think that's on the goaltenders themselves. I think that has to do a lot with the play happening in front of the goaltenders. When saves need to happen in these games, take the Ottawa game, for example, the saves are happening. That first goal, I don't blame it on Vitek at all, but there's a couple shots on net that were tricky later in that game that Vitek was able to make a huge save on. He kept it a 2-0 game, and eventually we tied it up. Eventually we won it in overtime. Pick one. I don't like this flip-flopping back and forth between whichever one is hot at the time or whichever one. I don't know what Peter Laviolette is deciding or how he's deciding right now. I think the team needs a number one goaltender. Pick one, go all in on him, especially after the All-Star break when you're going down the last 30 games of the season. Go all in on him and have a 1-2 mentality. Don't have a 1A, 1B.
I disagree with some of that, and here's why. When Holtby was coming up, Ovechkin was still in his 20s. Bastion was still in his 20s. We had a lot more time left to win a cup. And time is not a luxury that we have anymore. And that's a little bit why I'm willing to be bad after Ovechkin is gone to get him one more cup. Where I do agree with you is that we do need a number one. Just pick one. We can't keep flip-flopping like this. That I absolutely agree with. Someone who has been floated as an option, who he actually has 2 years on his contract, including this year, so he wouldn't be a pure rental, is James Reimer, who's actually got some good numbers. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I would suggest him as a potential alternative to Marc-Andre Fleury, who's more expensive and is also a pure rental because he only has one year left on his deal. How would you guys feel about Reimer?
We can't go expensive no matter what it is. We just don't have the room.
There's no way. And I think that those that are clamoring for Marc-Andre Fleury don't realize that
they don't. They haven't done the math on it.
Even with you can say, the year's half paid already. You still are responsible for that part of his contract unless you can. And I don't think Brian McClellan has another gun left in that bullet that shoot the other GM in the head and say, you will take the rest of this salary for this year. No, he's not going to convince Chicago management of that. Because they know if he even approaches them, they know he's going to be desperate. So they've got him. That's the other reason why I'm not for a rental. But as far as Reimer, I would not be opposed to that. I like his work. He's very steadying influence. He's pretty solid. I saw him play in L.A. and Carolina mostly. I know he had some time with Toronto as well, but once he got out of Toronto, he actually got better, I thought. And
his numbers are really good this year.
I got to know him a lot better when he was with when he played in front of a young Carolina defense. And not what I liked about his game is that he not much rattles him a whole lot, so he might be that mentor if one is needed. So he might be a good alternative if they decide to go that route. But I just don't think, and I think Brad, you probably a lot closer to, you know, pointing out the reality of the situation in that we've got two basically homegrown goalies, and maybe that final push that one of them needs is to be named the number one, to be entrusted with mostly the day-to-day duties while the other person is the backup.
Even if we do go for a rental, even if Reimer does come on board, which would be nice. You're right. He has good numbers. I'm looking at right now, 283 with a 914 percentage. That's not bad. Even if he does come on board, pick one. That's all I beg of Peter Laviolette. Pick one. Make him your day-to-day, because I feel like the mentality for the team shifts at that point. Right now, the team is so volatile with COVID and with injuries and all that. We don't need to throw more volatility into the system by not knowing which goaltender is going to be going in and day out. Let's pick one. I don't care if it's Reimer. I don't care if it's Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't care if it's Samsonov or Vitek. Pick one. Stick with him. Make him your guy. Let the guys rally around him. And then in the end, I'd also like to see some better play in front of whatever goaltender we throw out there.
Well, that was the other thing. The person I had my discussion with was very quick to point out that and Blake, you can back me up or them up on this, but as far as 5-on-5 shots against, the Caps are in the high part of the top tier at preventing that, and yet low save percentage, low goals against, higher goals against average equals, you know, subpar goaltending. Was their argument.
Yeah, the Caps don't allow a lot of shots, and the shots they allow are from the perimeter. I would put a heavy percentage of our goals against issues on the goaltending and not against the defense, because it slipped a little bit for the first part of the season. It was, you know, elite. It was brick wall, and I don't think you would say those things at this point. But I still think they're very good, and they have the potential to, you know, when healthy, be that brick wall in front of our goalie again. And it's tough when you pull up a heat map for the Caps and it's just all blue, and then we're giving up, you know, 5 goals.
I disagree, guys. I think Ottawa game is a prime example. The first goal, it's a goal against on literally, I think, the first or second shot of the game. And that looks terrible for a goaltender, but you can't blame the goaltender for that. But then in the second period, third period, when he's making fantastic lie on your face saves on high tip plays on a power play to keep the game as a 2-0 game and let your team crawl back into it, those types of things don't show in stats. And that's the type of stuff that I see on the ice every day. I think I blame a lot more of it on the play in front of the goaltender. The goaltenders are playing well enough. Now, again, you could argue, does a goaltender need to steal games? That's neither here nor there. We're not in the playoffs yet. But right now, the goaltenders are definitely playing well enough to win games. We need the other 18 guys to step up.
What's so frustrating about this is definitely true of Samsonov. It's less true of Vanecek, but it's glaringly true of Samsonov. He makes those crazy elite Dominik Hasek-esque saves, and then he just lets in a little from the point that you go, why did that go in?
And yeah, there's definitely those instances.
Make the easy saves. What, you know, like, why are you making your job harder for yourself? Make the easy saves.
I guess what it comes down to for me,
very frustrating about our goaltending situation right now.
When I look at any goal, I always look at the 10 seconds leading up to it. And if I can say nobody else is at fault for the play getting to that point, then I'll blame it on the goaltender. But that there's a lot of people I talk to, their first blame is the goaltender. And it really bugs me. It does.
Trust me, I'm with you. I'm very slow to blame goaltenders, and even I'm blaming the goaltenders lately. Like, I'm very hesitant to say it's the goalie's fault, but my goodness, the amount of blue on our heat maps to be allowing the kinds of goals we're doing, and also the just like looking at the shots, like something like, I'm out of your net a little bit, bud. Why are you so deep in the crease?
Sometimes.
Why are you so deep in the crease, Sammy?
Sometimes positioning is big for both these goaltenders. I think Samsonov has way too much movement in his game right now. Yeah. It's very unsettling. But either way, if you blame a goaltender or not, I think what we can all agree on is that you need to pick one. Make it a 1-2. Don't make it a 1A, 1B.
Please pick one.
I would definitely go along with that 110%. Confidence is, I think Braden Holtby proved it best of all. The mental aspect, and Anna and I would talk about this to death, but the mental aspect of the goalie game, as Braden Holtby grew to master over his years, is so, so important. And if you know you are the guy, then that adds just enough confidence, just enough swagger to your game. And that spills off on your teammates. And
that's what we need.
That translates to a better play. So yeah, I'm on board with that for sure. Make somebody the number one now. But I'm also kind of with you, Brad, as far as, you know, they've been playing good enough to win the games. Now the argument though is the numbers don't bear out that if that continues though and does not improve, good enough won't be good enough in the playoffs. Now, I do have, you guys both mentioned the technical aspects of both goalies. I think Samsonov tends to get himself out of position a little too much, but makes up for it with his better athleticism. I think Vanecek positions himself way too low and way too deep in the net sometimes, but makes up for it by his superior positioning play and reading the play a lot better before it happens. So,
well said. Very well said.
I'm going to, frustratingly enough, I'm going to counter my own argument in agreeing with a number one in that maybe depending upon how the opposition adjusts the way they play, the way they, you know, attack us in the playoffs. And I've seen teams doing this. The Islanders come to mind. You platoon the goalies as needed. But then again, that counters, you know, the purpose of a goalie being the guy and providing that confidence. And maybe that's the, you know, one of the last pieces of the puzzle. So it's going to be a bit of a job to figure out.
Literally, the real solution is to just Frankenstein it and just take Sammy's athleticism and put it on Vanecek's positioning. That's what we need to do. That's a Hall of Famer right there.
I think I actually read someone either tweet that or suggest that in one of the Facebook rooms. If you could somehow combine both of their best traits, you would have the perfect goalie.
I'll get GMBM on the phone and we'll get right on that, guys. Don't worry. I got you.
Yeah.
But that's kind of funny that so when you get to the playoffs, which is the ultimate goal, right? The whole point of these 82 games is just make it to the playoffs. But that's the fun about the playoffs is that you're playing a team a minimum 4 games in a row. So yeah, you could get used to a goaltender and you could maybe throw a team off their scent by switching back and forth. That is a plausible strategy. Do I think it's a strategy that has proven to work in the past? Absolutely not. I think if you look at any of the past winners in the past decade, let's say, they always had the number one. They had a goaltender they went with 100% of the time, no matter what, unless special circumstances called their number two to come into a game. And that's what we need, regardless of the situation of defense or how the forwards are playing or defense, whatever. Let's pick one. Let's go with him. Let's put confidence in him. I don't care if it's a rental at this point. Let's pick a number one.
Well, I think that would do well for the team if they did that now or very soon, but they might have to do some adjusting on the fly come playoff time, because you're not going to know what you're going to get until, you know, the seeding bears out. And that could be until, you know, may not know until the very last day of the season exactly who you end up playing. So it's really going to depend on that. And they may not have the wherewithal to figure out, you know, come the trade deadline, what they want to do. So just so many dynamics between now and then that has to be figured out. And it's just, it's like I said, it's going to be a big job to figure out. No matter, you know, obviously no matter what they do, they're going to decide in, you know, the best interest of the team. But I'm still of the mindset, I'll close the argument with this. I'm still of the mindset that, you know, yes, okay, it's good enough, and it might not be good enough come playoff time, but you got what you got. They have been good enough to win the games. And yes, it's a cliche that a goalie should be able to bail you out, but why can't the reverse be true? Why can't the team bail out the goalie? And right, on some nights, that's what has had to happen. Is the goalie does his job and keeps them competitive enough, and then the attacking game kicks in, they ramp up their game, and they score enough goals to pull ahead and win the game. So if one can be true, why can't the reverse, the opposite, be true?
You know what you just described? A Stanley Cup winning team.
Well, they say defense wins championships, and sometimes a good offense, and I'm not talking about, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 goals a game, is your best defense.
Give me a 1-2 game every day.
Well, sometimes
victory.
All you have to do is keep possession of the puck, put shots on net or shots towards the net, keep the pressure on the other team, and as long as you stay ahead in that aspect, you win.
I think the team is in a situation right now where that we need to get past, and that's not having the team on the ice, not having a full team. Once we get everybody there and we can really evaluate where we are, maybe I can start thinking about, all right, the defense needs to step up, or goaltending needs to step up, or whatever. It's just so hard right now when you have, you don't have one game to the next where you have the same team on the ice.
Well, the next few weeks coming up to that end are going to be pretty critical. And so instead of course, the schedule change came out. So instead of the 2.5-week Olympic break, now we have a full complement of games within those 2 weeks. So that'll be a pretty good test to figure out exactly what you suggested, Brad, as far as getting people back, getting a full lineup. And I, you know, I can't help but say again that if a goalie knows what he's got to work with, then that's going to add to his mental preparation as well. So that'll certainly help. Well, both guys, I would think. So speaking of the upcoming games, let's segue into the near-term schedule here. Tomorrow night, still at Cap 1, 7 o'clock puck drop against the Vegas Golden Knights. And they're, of course, one of the perennial teams in the West. So that'll be a pretty good test in and of itself. And then two nights later, I myself will have the pleasure of attending, along with luminaries such as Brad Silvestro and Grant Green here, the Scottish Caps fan podcast, and a whole complement of others, hosting the San Jose Sharks, also 7 o'clock puck drop at Cap One. And then they head out west to Dallas, play an old friend. I don't know if he's going to get the start, but old friend Braden Holtby, 9 o'clock puck drop out there. And then we head into February for two games in the first week. It'll be against Pittsburgh. Again, always a good test, especially since now that they've passed the Caps in the standings. So that'll be one to watch for sure. And then the game right after, it'll be a back-to-back on Groundhog Day back at Cap One against the Edmonton Oilers and Connor McJesus and Herr Goalmeister, Leon Dreisaitl.
I feel like I've seen that one before.
So, yeah, you might have. Five games right there that will, if the Caps can manage to get at least close to a full lineup, will be a nice test of their resolve and result. So if the Caps can come away with three wins, be they in regulation or overtime, out of those five games, I would say that's probably a reasonable expectation. I think there'll be tough outs, all of them, but I think at a minimum 6 points out of those games can be had for sure.
An important stretch of games because only one of those games like truly matters as far as standings go, and that's the Pittsburgh game, right? So all the other ones, it doesn't matter if you win it in 60 minutes. It doesn't matter if you win it in overtime. It doesn't matter if you win it in shootout. Just win the game. Give a loser point to whomever. It doesn't matter. Just get some points. Let's accumulate. Let's move a little bit and let's get some consistency going. That's all I look for in the next five games. Consistency.
Yes, certainly. And the fact that these three games for this week were all decided by one goal, I think points to they're heading more towards putting out, if not a consistent result, then certainly a consistent effort. Okay. So, all right, Blake, did you have anything further to add, given all of that?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So, we ran long here, but, you can't say we don't give you your money's worth here at the Power Play Point podcast. It was a 2-for-1 special, gents. I do want to thank you again for both, coming on a Sunday evening with me and discussing the Caps play of late. As always, I hope to have you both on real, real soon.
It's fun as always, man. I can't wait till we can do it again.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Always a pleasure having both of you go on. So, okay. So with that, we'll wrap the show up here. So for the stats guy, Blake Allen, and the just a fan, Brad Silvestro, this is the Blue Liner on Point signing off and reminding you that I recently spent all my spare cash into renting a limo, but it didn't come with a driver. So you know what I had? I wasted all that money and I had nothing to chauffeur.
Boo.
I love it.
I say boo, but I'm laughing.
Hallelujah. And let's go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.